Good evening, and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley, the WDIY program presented along with our partners from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Let's first welcome our co-hosts, Becky Bradley, the Executive Director, and Matt Assad, its Managing Director.
Good evening.
All right, so tonight we're going to take a look at the region's application for a $115 million EPA grant to add green infrastructure along some of our busiest highways. I think this is just a really exciting topic that we can all appreciate as we're driving in our cars on our commute to and from work to have a little something more to look at than billboards. The Green Transportation Infrastructure Project is an innovative plan to add meadows of wildflowers, pollinator corridors, and bioswales to several PennDOT rights of way as part of the region's climate action efforts. Our guests, Susan Myrov and Allison Harvey, helped put together the Green Transportation Infrastructure Project grant application to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Susan arrived at the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission in November with more than 30 years of dedication to protecting our environment. She's one of the state's leading experts in watershed planning and protection. She spent 10 years as Watersheds Program Director for the Pennsylvania Environmental Council, and before that was a senior planner for the Heritage Conservancy. At the LVPC, she's directing the region's first ever Lehigh Valley Comprehensive Climate Action Plan and its first priority climate action plan for transportation decarbonization, along with a list of other duties aimed at protecting the region's environment. Allison is a design principal in the Philadelphia office of OJB, a private nationwide collective landscape and urban planning practice whose mission is to weave together ecology and play to create beautiful, environmentally conscious landscapes. She's a licensed landscape architect with a master's degree from the University of Pennsylvania and has 15 years of experience combining practical research with emerging design practices. She leads OJB Lab, which is an applied research arm of the practice. The lab team focuses on sustainability performance and improving public health, including leading studies for improving air quality and greenhouse gas capture along highway corridors. Welcome to you both. Let's get started on the conversation. Matt, why don't you start off by telling us what the Green Transportation Infrastructure Project is?
This is a project, as we said, green infrastructure along 522 acres of PennDOT rights of way. And to give you an idea, that's about 400 football fields. And we're talking about meadows of wildflowers, microforests of trees, and pollinator corridors all along Route 22, 33, and 378. These things are going to be right where they can sequester emissions, right where they're being created. There's also pollinator corridors for birds and insects. It's just a very cool project that is not only good for the environment, as an added bonus, it's going to make our most traveled highways look great. The LVPC recently filed the Lehigh Valley's first ever priority climate action plan, and this would really be the first big project in that plan. You know, if we're awarded the $115 million federal grant we've applied for, it could happen as early as 2027.
Oh, wow. So, Becky, I understand this has been a personal mission of yours. How did you arrive at this idea?
I mean, we were working on a long time ago. I'll give you the nerdy version and then try to wrap it up with like how we got to today. But when I moved to Philadelphia to go to graduate school at UPenn, I was working at a planning, architecture, historic preservation, archaeology firm called Kystraw and Kolodner, or KSK. And one of our projects there was to work with the state of New Jersey on designation of historic transportation corridors. And so I was working in historic preservation planning. My undergraduate degree is in historic preservation, and I've been working in that. And so I was really learning about the history of roadways and really learning how they were really planned not to just be part of the transportation system initially, but really planned to be part of the park system. in some cases. And there's some amazing examples of that, the Merritt Parkway, portions of the Baltimore-Washington Expressway, other places around the country. Some of these sort of remnants of early 20th century America still exist. In fact, even are managed by the National Park Service for their value, not only for transportation, but their value for being temples to nature as well. And so that education and that project that I worked on really stuck with me, and I've carried it with me. And then we started working, you know, fast forward to today, you know, Susan arrives, we're working on this priority climate action plan with the EPA. We focus on transportation decarbonization, specifically tailored around air quality and the declining air quality in the Lehigh Valley. We're a valley, so it traps a lot of carbon dioxide anyway. And then we have all of this growth in people, in industry. And so it's just more is more. How do we manage that and make massive change quickly? And I had this like flashback moment to, you know, we could kind of leverage this actually very old idea and utilize natural system services and a landscape solution in a major way that not only helps protect and enhance our transportation system, but has massive air quality benefits amongst other benefits. And I'd met Allison doing some work at UPenn. Susan was there with me. Susan went to UPenn too. So you're seeing the connection here. Yeah, we go down periodically and you know, our volunteers for studio critiques for students that are in the Weitzman School of Design now. And that has planning, landscape, architecture, historic preservation, and fine arts in it. And so, you know, you can great cross-disciplinary group of these amazing young people. And I ran into somebody who works with Allison named MV, and we just started talking about some work they were doing on a little bit smaller scale down in the Philly region. And that, you know, that connection stuck with me. And so when this grant opportunity came around, of course, PennDOT was at the table, right? Because we can't just be like, hey, PennDOT, we want to redo your right of way and, you know, force ourselves upon them. But they had really been talking through some issues of sinkholes because of stormwater management and subsurface geology being fragile in certain locations, and a lot of issues of more intensive rainfalls, and then everyone's concerned about air quality. And we're non-attainment for ozone in this region for state federal standards. And so, you know, we all had this light bulb moment of, my gosh, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity for us to do something bigger than ourselves and really utilize these natural system services to make the Lehigh Valley a better place.
That's awesome. That's really great history, too, about roads. I had no idea. So, Susan, can you talk about the benefits of this project? I mean, I think it's pretty clear, but, you know, this goes well beyond carbon reduction, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of co-benefits and related benefits to utilizing a green infrastructure approach. Green infrastructure includes a whole suite of land use and conservation practices to help create natural areas and habitat corridors and reduce and manage stormwater runoff. So the different land types that we are proposing for our transportation corridors will help, as you mentioned, sequester carbon through strategies such as reforestation. We're going to replant some trees. We're going to restoration of habitat areas. If you're familiar with these corridors, you could see nothing or you can see lawn. So we're going to kind of transform some of that. Again, taking lawn conversion to meadows, and we're going to create these pollinator habitats as well. These strategies provide co-benefits, again, as I mentioned, such as habitat creation, the stormwater management, air quality improvements, noise attenuation, and mitigation of heat island effect. And just to give you a quick example about that, within the Lehigh Valley, we have many of our low-income and disadvantaged communities are concentrated in more developed areas with a high proportion of what we like to refer to as grayscape, which is the built environment. This happens especially in cities and boroughs. And in particular, Center City Allentown and Southside Bethlehem are in that sort of the 90th percentile nationwide for share of land area covered by impervious surfaces or these hard surfaces. These neighborhoods are susceptible to extreme heat and urban island effects or heat island effects as temperatures rise, and they are made worse by vehicle exhaust in areas with high proximity to traffic. So by converting these impervious areas to more natural spaces and reducing traffic in these developed areas really can significantly improve temperature conditions and help with other climate change impacts such as flooding and air quality. And if you think also about trees, my favorite thing to talk about, they can reduce actual microclimate temperatures up to 30 degrees. So asphalt and concrete, again, have these high surface temperatures. And when they're exposed to this direct solar radiation, they cause, again, what we call the heat island effect. So when you plant trees along the right of way, this will reduce that effect. And we're really looking to see a lot of these different benefits from this project and really excited about it.
That's great. So Allison, how are you able to project the benefits of this project? How do you go about quantifying what a field of wildflowers will do for our environment?
Great question. And I think this kind of is rooted in the industry of landscape architecture. You know, often when we think about landscape architecture, we're thinking about being inside of a beautiful park. But really what it comes down to is landscape architecture is equally a science as it is an art. And I like to think of it as having this superpower that it's really this medium that is relevant to everybody, as well as all of the fields of study that are out there. And so as an industry, we leverage a lot of other industries to understand and think about landscape architecture, like the sciences. So we like to use the innovations within the sciences to measure and understand. So for this project, it wanted to look specifically at greenhouse gas and air pollution capture. And that can be done through a variety of landscapes, not just wildflowers, but meadow plantings, forests. Wetlands are amazing greenhouse gas sinks and carbon sinks. So there's this great growing body of research and tools that are out there that have been either adapted for landscape architecture or are really kind of a collaboration. One is called iTree. This is a public-private partnership tool that's funded by the U.S. Forest Service and Davy Tree. And then another great tool that we often turn to is a newer tool called Carbon Conscious, which basically uses a larger database that's assembled through various publications. So that kind of helps us understand the greenhouse gas capture and air pollution sort of with the state of knowledge right now. But we also want to acknowledge, you know, what Susan was talking about, that there are also these indirect ways that we can think about how we're reducing greenhouse gases. And you can kind of begin to pull the thread. So we can think about things, you know, where changing our right-of-way and plantings could reduce the amount of greenhouse gas that's coming from mowing and maintenance. And we can measure that. We can also think about, you know, reducing heat and improving air quality. And that means that there's less energy and carbon going into cooling buildings and also improving people's health so that they're not relying as much on healthcare. And then there are those, you know, those really indirect larger systems that you can think about reducing greenhouse gas. So by improving pollination, we can actually have an impact on agriculture, where lands are becoming more effective per acre because they're getting better pollination. So we're getting higher yield. That transfers also to natural lands. So in natural lands, if we have great pollination, that helps keep our forests and natural landscapes alive, so that those existing landscapes can continue to sequester carbon and greenhouse gases. So how we kind of think about this is that it's about shaping our environment with real intention, but also understanding that it impacts our communities. And that's really where the magic of landscape architecture comes together, is it connects people to their landscapes.
So you must see environmental projects from across the nation. Have you seen others like this one?
Not exactly like this. You know, when I initially spoke with Becky and Susan, you know, we asked this question and we kind of were very familiar with like Lady Bird Johnson's work and the Highway Beautification Act in the 1960s. And that's really extended on to work with the Federal Highway Administration, where there's a lot of work going on re-envisioning roadway right-of-way as these pollinator pathways and corridors. So there's a lot of tangential work. Even the EPA right now and universities across the United States are starting to look at how we can rethink roadway landscapes to capture air pollution, especially to protect sensitive user groups. Like if you have a housing development or a school for children, these sensitive user groups need to have clean air. So I think what this project is doing, though, is kind of taking a new attitude towards what green infrastructure really, really needs to be. And maybe this model is closer to what we're seeing in my industry of landscape architecture. We're seeing this happening, especially in large parklands, but not so much applied to highway corridors. So this is really about kind of green infrastructure that has this comprehensive, holistic sustainability conversation where, you know, we're looking at greenhouse gas collection, habitat pollinators, improving air pollution, biomass collection, heat reduction, stormwater management, safety and beautification. It really needs to be an approach that's kind of everything in a bag of chips. So that's what we're really trying to do. And we really hope that it becomes realized.
And if it does become realized and funded, is this something you could see being replicated in other regions and states?
Absolutely. I think that even if it doesn't, this is where we need to go in the nation. There's over 160,000 lineal miles of highways in our national highway system. Imagine if we took such a simple idea and scaled it up. It's really cool because it could be adapted to different ecoregions. So the expression of the landscape would change, you know, depending on where you are within the United States. So I think also it is something that, you know, this approach is really looking at a range of conditions. So this project's proposing, you know, conditions that are more urbanized and conditions that are maybe a little bit more rural adjacent. So I think we need to have a conversation about how the approach and the goals could translate to urban settings, especially in, you think of cities and towns, a large percentage of cities and towns are roadways and they have this right of way. So, you know, we should take advantage of this public land and use it for the health of the public.
Becky, I know you have some theories on benefits that maybe aren't as tangible. You think this will make drivers and their passengers more respectful?
Find out. I do believe that it will. And here's my theory. And I'm hoping we move this project forward. I can prove my theory, right? Let's see if the data plays out. But, you know, when you go, if you start to re-envision your transportation system is also part of your natural environment, your park system, think about when you go to a park, right? You're going there to relax. You're going there to maybe participate in an active sport, but you're there really for, you know, your mind, your body, your heart, your health. You're there with a purpose, and it's usually around recreation and relaxation. You act differently in that space. So if we're focusing on areas where we have the highest amount of crashes, and, you know, we did specifically pick some of those locations, or where we have high incidences of repeated speeding, very high miles per hour over the speed limit, those corridors become very dangerous, right? So if you have a place that feels more special and is a more relaxing as you're in it, then that should help reduce some serious injuries and fatalities, I believe. We all act in nicer spaces a little bit better, right? You sit up a little bit, stand up a little bit taller if, you know, you're in a community that looks nice and you're walking around. So the same should apply when you're in a vehicle. And I think that's so very important because the number of serious injuries and fatalities that we've been seeing nationwide, but certainly in the Lehigh Valley, is unacceptable. And we have this goal of moving towards zero traffic fatalities. And that could be, you know, somebody walking across the street. We'd have a number of fatalities recently that are just horrific. If we're in a space that feels better for everyone and feels safer, then we should be able to slow some of that down. And then I think one of the other things that we learned, and we really honestly weren't talking about this, but when we put in the application and talked a little bit to members of the media, and they wrote stories, and that was super cool that we got picked up here and there in our local news outlets, we started getting feedback from people, and we found out that there's this whole group of people that voluntarily pick up trash along Route 22. And, you know, we all see the signs that, you know, this area of the highway system is cleaned up by X business and people from Y business. But this is way beyond that. I mean, these are like literal, like armies of people that go out once a month even and take their time to make sure that our Route 22 in particular has trash cleaned up. The Commonwealth also assists with that, as well as people who pay for the signs. But it's so bad, the trash situation. And I don't think we necessarily realize that. So we started getting into a conversation with the folks that volunteer their time to go out and do this. And it's a lot of people, by the way, who are very passionate about keeping our community clean and the types of trash they were finding. And so, you know, they immediately jumped to, well, hopefully this will reduce the amount of trash. If we do go forward with this, you know, the types of plantings we plant are going to matter because we don't want the trash hidden in the plants. And, you know, it really, really, people got so excited about it, these amazing community members, that we started to realize that there's probably more benefits than we're even thinking about. And there is an opportunity for the greater good. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention too, and Allison touched on this a little bit, but I mentioned her colleague, MV. She sent us some comparisons of actual park space in the Lehigh Valley compared to the amount of right-of-way that was proposed, either in Clover Leafs or in linear corridors, like on 33, the amount of acreage compared to the park system. And, you know, I had this moment of, oh my gosh, we could literally double the amount of park-type environment in our Lehigh Valley by one project. And it's not even all the work that we want to do. This, we think, will be the beginning. But the truth of the matter is we are in a massive competition with, 72-ish or so regions across the entire United States, as well as most of the states. So this isn't a given that we're going to receive these resources. And I know Matt's going to talk a little bit about that as well, but we have an opportunity, and it's kind of once in a lifetime. And I think that's where some of the energy and excitement behind this comes from. And then really starting to have these community conversations, recognizing all the benefits, even the ones that we don't necessarily see easily.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be a lot more here to get excited about. So if this gets funded, Susan, it's really just the beginning of things, isn't it?
Well, yeah, if you just listening to Becky and then Allison, and you know, we are envisioning that if we are funded, we will be able to utilize the experience and our knowledge about this kind of process to create guidelines and create maybe a book that we can share with other DOTs, not only here in our state, but across the country. And as Allison mentioned, 160,000 linear miles of roadway. My gosh, this could be like huge. So, you know, we hope that we'll be able to create some information, lessons learned that can be used and utilized to really scale this up even beyond the Lehigh Valley. In addition, we're going to be establishing greenhouse gas tracking mechanisms. We're going to monitor the changes that will be occurring. We hope to add additional air quality monitors. We really have to understand the value. You have to be able to measure it. And so that's what we're going to be doing. I mean, there's actually ways that we'll be able to monitor things like health and wellness data. We can also monitor our pollinator habitats that we're going to create. There's something called a Simpson's Diversity Index. There's ways that we can understand the impact of this and then, you know, be able to explain and really broadcast that to a wider audience. So when you ask me the question, what happens next? There's a lot of great potential here. And we're not even done with our climate action planning, because we're heading into something called a comprehensive climate action plan following this, that's going to look at other sectors and other ways that we can, you know, improve our region and reduce greenhouse gases from these other sectors, in addition to transportation. But that's another that's another outcome of this.
Right, right. So, Matt, $115 million is a big ask, and it was mentioned earlier that we're in a big competition for this money. What do you think the chances are of us getting this grant in the Lehigh Valley?
I don't know that I'm going to go to Vegas and put any odds on this. I don't know that I'm qualified for it. But, and you're right, it is a big ask, and we're up against the likes of New York and Chicago and the state of California with 40 million people. So yes, we are. This is a sort of swing for the fences kind of move, but it's also a limited pool of entities, you know, and that are eligible. It's just 70 regions across the country and all of the states, and not every state actually filed for this, amazingly. So we're talking about less than 120 applications. It's not everybody everywhere. So we're in that. As soon as you're into the carbon pollution reduction grant program, which we're in, you're sort of one of less than 120, and there is a pool of money that has never been this large before, $4.3 billion. So a lot of these projects are going to get funded. So yeah, we got a puncher's shot at this. It's very competitive, but once you're in the program, you have a fair shot, and I think we do.
So quickly, is there anything our listeners can do to better our chances?
I think there is. You can go to lvpc.org. You can hit the show your support button. That's going to take you to a page. With a couple of clicks, you're going to be able to send a letter of support directly to the EPA administrator. To give you an idea, we did this for the RAISE grant. Hundreds of folks around the Lehigh Valley did it, and it actually had an impact. They noticed us. So we're hoping it works again. So everyone help us out.
All right.
Help yourselves out.
Good old-fashioned letter writing campaign.
That's right. And, you know, the RAISE grant Matt mentioned, I know we've talked about it on this show a while ago, but that resulted in like $21.2 million. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is 115. So we need more than double the letters of support if we're running the stats on that. So all the help we can get is appreciated. And I think a lot of these things that this project could do are quality of life related. It's those factors that we add value to, but sometimes aren't necessarily quantifiable. This is beyond climate change. It is part of the solution to work towards a better planet and a better Lehigh Valley, but it also has immediate impact on everything from employer recruitment efforts for staff to, you know, us just being able to breathe healthy air. So there's so much to this, and I can't ask enough for your support on this, because, you know, honestly, I joke internally about this, but I'm really kind of serious about it. We're on the verge of greatness with this. And the one thing that the Lehigh Valley can do that other much larger regions can't do, they're a tanker ship. You can't turn a tanker fast. We're a speedboat, and speedboats are way more fun. And so, you know, who doesn't want to be part of that party?
All right. Well, there it is, listeners. Call to action. Get out there, lvpc.org, and sign the letter. Thank you so much for sharing this information tonight. Thank you, Susan and Allison and Becky and Matt. You can listen to this program again on wdiy.org or the WDIY app or your favorite podcast platform. Thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell. Thanks for listening to WDIY 88.1.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to the WDIY website or app to share or become a WDIY member.